doctor.
No, Maggie protested. I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all.
Yes, you did. Esther put her hand on her shoulder, squeezing it. Face it, if it wasn't her, it just would have been some other girl.
Some other stupid girl, Leah added, picking up the magazine and flipping through it. Then, as an afterthought, she glanced at me and said, No offense. He's just an idiot.
He is not, Maggie protested, tears filling her eyes.
Come on, Mag. You know he is. Esther glanced at me, then slid her hand down Maggie's arm, wrapping a hand over hers.
And now you can really start to get over him. If you think about it, this is probably the best thing that could have happened.
That's right, Leah agreed, flipping another page.
How do you figure?
Maggie whimpered. But she allowed herself to be led back to the counter, numbly taking her mocha as Leah handed it off to her.
Because, Esther said gently, you were still just hanging on, torturing yourself, thinking he was coming back, and now you have to let go. She kind of did you a favor, if you really think about it.
Maggie looked back over at me, and I made myself stand up straighter. I couldn't believe I'd actually been worried about her. She was tiny, pink as a powder puff. Thinking this, I emerged from behind the suits and started for the door.
Wait a second, she said.
I didn't have to stop. I knew that. Still, I slowed my steps, turning back to her. But I didn't say anything.
Do you...
She began, then stopped and took a breath.
Do you really like him? Just tell me. I know it's pathetic, but I need to know.
I just looked at her for a moment, feeling all those eyes on me. He's nothing to me, I said. She kept her gaze on me a moment longer. Then she picked up the checkbook, walking over and holding it out to me.
Thanks, she said.
Maybe in the world of girls, this was supposed to be a turning point. When we saw beyond our initial differences, realized we had something in common after all, and became true friends. But that was a place I didn't know well, had never lived in, and had no interest in discovering, even as a tourist. So I took the checkbook, nodded, and walked out the door, leaving them, as I had so many other groups, to say whatever they would about me once I was gone.
So, my mother said, tell me everything.
It was late afternoon, and I'd been dead asleep when my phone rang. Even without looking at it, I knew it had to be my mom. First, because it was her favorite time to make phone calls, right at the start of cocktail hour. It wasn't like I was expecting to hear from anyone else, except maybe my brother, Hollis, and he only called in the middle of the night, having yet to fully grasp the concept of time zones.
Well, I said, stifling a yawn. It's really pretty here. You should see the view.
I'm sure it is, she replied. But don't bore me with the scenery. I need details. How's your father?
I swallowed, then glanced at my shut door, as if I could somehow see through it, all the way down to his. Amazing how easily my mother could get to the one thing I didn't want to talk about. She always just knew. I'd now been at my dad's for 3 days, during which I'd probably seen him a total of, 3 hours. He was either in his office working, in his bedroom sleeping, or in the kitchen grabbing a quick bite, en route to one or the other. So much for my visions of us hanging out and bonding, sharing a plate of onion rings and discussing literature and my future. Instead, our conversations usually took place on the stairs. A quick, "How's it going? Been to the beach today?" as we went in opposite directions. Even these, though, were better than the efforts I'd made at knocking on his office door. Then he didn't even bother to turn away from the computer screen. My attempts at dialogue bouncing off the back of his head like shots missing the rim by a mile. It sucked. What was worse, though, was that if my father was non-existent, Heidi was everywhere. If I went to get coffee, she was in the kitchen, feeding the baby. If I tried to hide on the deck, she emerged, Thisbe in the baby Bjorn, inviting me to join them for a walk on the beach. Even in my room, I wasn't safe, as it was so close to the nursery that even the slightest movement or noise summoned her, as she assumed I was as desperate for companionship as she was. Clearly, she was lonely. But I wasn't. I was accustomed to being alone. I liked it. Which was why it was surprising that I even noticed my dad's lack of attention, much less cared. But for some reason, I did. And all her muffins and chatter and over-friendliness just made it worse. I could have told my mother all of this. After all, it was exactly what she wanted to hear. But to do so, for some reason, seemed like a failure. I mean, what had I expected, anyway? So I took a different tack. "Well," I began, "he's writing a lot. He's in his office every day, all day." A pause as she processed this, then, "Really?" "Yeah," I said. "He says he's almost done with the book, just has some tightening up to do."
"Tightening up that takes all day, every day," she said. "Ouch."
"What about the baby? Is he helping Heidi out with her?" I said, then immediately regretting it, knowing this one utterance spoke volumes. "He does, but she's actually really determined to do it on her own." "Oh, please," my mom said. I could hear her satisfaction. "Nobody wants to be the sole caregiver of a newborn, and if they say they do, it's only because they don't really have a choice. Have you seen your father change a diaper?"
"I'm sure he has."
"Yes, but Auden," I winced. This was like being painted into a corner, stroke by stroke. "Have you seen it?"
"Well," I said, "not really."
"Ah," she exhaled again, and I could almost hear her smiling. "Well, it's nice to know some things really never do change." I wanted to point out that since this was what she was so sure of, she shouldn't have been surprised. Instead, I said, "So how are you doing?"
"Me?"
A sigh.
"Oh, the same old, same old. I've been asked to head up the committee rewriting the English core courses for next year, with all the attendant drama that will entail. And I have several articles expected by various journals, my trip to Stratford coming up, and, of course, entirely too many dissertations that clearly cannot be completed without a large amount of hand-holding."
"Sounds like quite a summer," I said, opening my window.
"Tell me about it. These graduate students, I swear, it just never ends. They're all so needy."
She sighed again. And I thought of those black-rimmed glasses sitting on the countertop. I have half a mind to decamp to the coast like you, and spend the summer on the beach without a care in the world. I looked out the window at the water, the white sand, the tip just visible beyond. Yep, I wanted to say. That's me exactly. So, I said, thinking this, have you heard from Hollis lately? Night before last, she said. Then she laughed. He was telling me he met some Norwegians who were on their way to a convention in Amsterdam. They own some internet startup, and apparently they're very interested in Hollis. Think he's really got his finger on the pulse of their American target audience, so he went along. He's thinking it could pan out into a position of some sort. I rolled my eyes. Funny how my mom could see through me entirely. But Hollis takes off for Amsterdam with some people he'd just met, spins it into a career move, and she goes for it hook, line, and sinker. Honestly. Just then there was a knock on my door. When I opened it, I was surprised to see my dad standing there.
Hey, he said, smiling at me. We're heading out for some dinner. Thought you might want to come along.
Sure, I mouthed, hoping my mother, who was still talking about Hollis, wouldn't hear.
Auden?
No luck. Her voice was clear through the receiver, a fact made more apparent by the way my dad winced.
Are you still there?
I am, I told her. But Dad just came and invited me to dinner, so I better go.
Oh, she said. So he's done with the tightening for the day?
I'll call you later, I said quickly, shutting my phone and folding my hand around it. My dad sighed.
And how is your mother?
Fine, I said. Let's go. Downstairs, Heidi was waiting for us, her own phone clamped to her ear, Thisbe strapped into her stroller. My dad opened the door, and she pushed the baby out as she kept talking.
But that doesn't make sense. I did the payroll myself, and we had plenty of money in the account. It just...
Well, of course. The bank would know.
I'm terribly sorry, Esther. This is so embarrassing. Look, we're on our way down there right now. I'll get some cash from the ATM and we'll work all this out on Monday, okay?
My dad took a deep breath as we stepped outside.
Gotta love that sea air,
he said to me, patting his hands on his chest.
It's great for the soul.
You're in a good mood, I said, as Heidi, still talking, eased the stroller down the front steps as we started toward the street.
Ah, well, that's what a breakthrough can do for you, he replied, reaching over Heidi's hand and taking the stroller handles from her.
She smiled at him, stepping aside as he began to push Thisbe along.
I'd been really struggling with this middle chapter, just couldn't find my groove. But then today, suddenly, it came together.
He snapped his fingers.
Just like that. It's going to make all the ones to follow that much easier.
I glanced at Heidi, who was now saying something about bank fees, a worried look on her face. I thought you were mostly tightening, I said to my dad.
What?
He said, nodding at a man who was jogging past, plugged into his iPod.
Oh, right. Well, it's all just a matter of fitting things together. A few more days like today, and I'll have this draft done by midsummer. At the latest.
Wow, I said, as Heidi shut her phone, then ran a hand through her hair. My dad reached over, grabbing her by the waist and pulling her closer, then planted a kiss on her cheek.
Isn't this great? He said, smiling. All of us together, going for Thisbe's first trip to the last chance.
It's wonderful, Heidi agreed. But I actually need to stop at the shop on the way. There's apparently some problem with the payroll checks.
It's Friday night, honey, my dad said. Just let it go. All that work stuff will still be there on Monday.
Yes, but... Heidi replied as her phone rang again. She glanced at it, then put it to her ear. Hello? Leah, yes, what's... Oh. No, I'm aware of it. Look, are you at the branch just down from the shop? Okay, then just walk over and I'll meet you there. I'm remedying it as we speak.
These girls she hires, my dad said, nodding at Heidi. Typical teenagers. It's always something.
I nodded, as if I were not, in fact, a teenager myself. Then again, to my dad, I wasn't. Their paychecks bounced, Heidi told him. It's kind of a serious situation.
Then call your accountant. Let him deal with it, he replied, making a goofy face down at Thisbe, who was drifting off to sleep. We're having family time.
He doesn't do payroll. I do, Heidi said.
Well, then tell them to wait until we finish dinner.
I can't do that, Robert. They deserve to be paid and...
Look, my dad said, annoyed. Weren't you the one who said I wasn't spending enough time with you and the baby and Auden, who insisted that I stop working and have a family dinner out?
Yes, Heidi said as her phone rang again, but...
So I knock off early. On my best day yet, I might add, he continued as we rolled up onto the boardwalk. And now you're not willing to do the same thing.
Robert, this is my business.
And writing isn't mine? Oh boy, I thought. Change a few details. Professorship for business, committees for employees... And this was the same fight he'd had with my mom all those years ago.
I glanced at Heidi. Her face was stressed, as Clementines now came into view, Esther and Leah standing outside together. Look, she said to my dad, why don't you and Auden take the baby and get a table and I'll meet you there. This will only take a few minutes, okay?
Fine.
My dad said, although clearly it wasn't. He wasn't the only one not happy. 20 minutes later, just as we were about to be seated at last chance, Thisbe woke up and started fussing. At first, it was a low, rumbling sort of crying, but then it began to escalate. By the time the hostess arrived and began to grab menus for us, she was pretty much screaming.
Oh, my dad said, moving the stroller forward and back.
Thisbe kept wailing.
Well, Auden, can you...
This was not followed by a verb, so I had no idea what he was asking. As Thisbe kept crying, though, now attracting the attention of pretty much everyone around us, he shot me another, more panicked look, and I realized he wanted me to jump in. Which was ridiculous. Even worse, I did it.
I'll take her, I said, grabbing the stroller from him and backing it up to the door.
Why don't you...
I'll sit down and order for us, he said. Just bring her back in when she's calmed down, all right?
Of course. Because that was going to happen any time soon. I wheeled her out onto the boardwalk, where at least the noise wasn't enclosed. Then sat down on a bench beside her, watched her face for a while, scrunched up and reddening, before glancing back into the restaurant. Past the hostess station, down a narrow aisle, I could see my dad, at a table for four, a menu spread out in front of him. I swallowed, then ran a hand over my face, closing my eyes. People don't change, my mother had said. And of course, she was right.
My dad was still selfish and inconsiderate, and I was still not wanting to believe it, even when the proof was right in front of me. Maybe we were all destined to just keep doing the same stupid things over and over again, never really learning a single thing. Beside me, Thisbe was now screaming, and I wanted to join in, sit back and open my mouth and let the years of frustration and sadness and everything else just spill forth into the world once and for all. But instead, I just sat there, silent, until I suddenly felt someone looking at me. I opened my eyes, and there, standing next to the stroller in jeans, beat-up sneakers, and a faded T-shirt that said, "Love Shove," across the front, was the guy I'd seen at the tip and the boardwalk. It was like he'd appeared from nowhere, and now was suddenly right there, studying Thisbe. As he did, I took the opportunity to do the same to him. Taking in his tanned skin and green eyes, shoulder-length dark hair pulled back messily at the back of his neck, the thick, raised scar that ran up one forearm, forking at the elbow like a river on a map. I had no idea why he was here, especially considering how he'd blown me off the last time we'd met, in this same place. But at that moment, I didn't have the energy to overthink. I said, "She just started screaming." He considered this, but said nothing, which, for some reason, God only knew why, made me feel like I needed to keep talking. "She's always crying, actually," I told him. "It's colic or just... I don't know what to do." Still he was silent, just like he'd been that night at the tip and on the boardwalk. The sick part was that I knew he wouldn't answer, but still insisted on talking to him anyway, which was so not like me, as I was the one who usually... "Well," he said suddenly, taking me by surprise yet again, "there's always the elevator." I just looked at him. "The elevator?" In response, he bent down and unhitched Thisbe from the stroller. Before I could stop him, and I was pretty sure I should stop him, he'd taken her out, lifting her up into his arms. My first thought was that this was the last thing I'd expected him to do. The second was how amazingly at ease he seemed with her, more than me and my dad and even Heidi combined. "This," he said, turning her so she was facing out, still screaming, of course, his hands wrapped around her midsection, legs dangling down and kicking wildly, "is the elevator." And then he bent his legs, easing down, and straightened them, then repeated it, once, twice, three times. By the fourth, she abruptly stopped her protests, a weird look of calm spreading over her face. I just stood there, looking at him. Who was this guy? Sullen stranger? Trick biker? Baby whisperer? Or... "Eli!" Heidi said, suddenly appearing behind him. "I thought that was you!" The guy glanced at her, then flushed, but only barely and briefly. "Hey," he said, stopping the elevator. Thisbe blinked, then burst into tears. "Oh, dear," Heidi said, reaching out to take her from me. To me, she said, "Where's your father?" "He got a table," I told her. "We were about to sit down when she started to freak out." "And she's probably hungry," Heidi said, glancing at her watch. Thisbe wailed louder over her shoulder, while I glanced at the guy, Eli, trying to process what I'd just seen. "What a day,"
You wouldn't believe the mess I have to deal with at work. The checkbook is all out of order. Somehow I missed a deposit or something. Thank God the girls are so understanding. I mean, it's not like their paychecks are for huge amounts, but still they work hard and... Between this soliloquy and the baby melting down, not to mention Eli witnessing it all, I could literally feel my temperature rising. Why did she have to make everything such a big deal? I better get back to the shop, he said to Heidi. Congratulations, by the way. Oh, Eli, you're so sweet. Thank you, she replied, jiggling the baby. And I'm so glad you met Auden. She's new here, hardly knows a soul, and I was hoping she'd find someone to introduce her around. I felt my face flush even hotter. Of course, she had to make it sound like I was desperate for company. Which was why I barely responded as Eli nodded at me before crossing the boardwalk and pushing the door open to the bike shop, disappearing inside.
Thisby, sweetheart, it's okay,
Heidi was saying, oblivious to all this as she strapped the baby back into the stroller. To me, she added,
it's so great you and Eli are friends.
We're not, I said. We don't even really know each other.
Oh.
She looked over at the bike shop as if it would confirm this, then back at me.
Well, he's really sweet. His brother Jake is about your age, I think. He went out with Maggie until just recently. Awful breakup, that was. She's still reeling from it.
His brother? I thought, my face flushing. How small was this freaking town, anyway? And Heidi was still talking.
Should we go back to the restaurant? She asked me. Or maybe I should take Thisby home. She's so upset. What do you think? I mean, I'd love a dinner out, but I wonder...
I don't, I said, the words coming even as I knew I should bite them back. I don't know what you should do, okay? All I know is that I'm hungry and I want to go eat with my father, so that's what I'm going to do, if it's all right with you. I could see her draw in a breath as a hurt look spread across her face.
Oh, she said after a moment. Well, sure. Of course.
I knew I'd been mean. I knew it. And yet, I still turned and walked away, leaving her and the baby still crying behind me. But I could have sworn the sound followed me, hanging on, filling my ears even through the crowd on the boardwalk into the restaurant, all the way down the narrow aisle to the table where my dad was already eating. He took a look at my face, then pushed a menu over to me as I slid into the booth across from him. Just relax, he said. It's Friday night. Right, I thought. Of course. And when the onion rings arrived a few minutes later, I tried to do just that. But for some reason, they didn't taste the same this time. Still good, but not great like before. I knew from experience when a fight was over and when it had only just begun. So I stayed gone after dinner, taking a walk on the beach and the longest way home. Not long enough, though. As I climbed the porch steps 2 hours later, I could hear them.
Understand what you want from me. You asked me to stop working and come to dinner. I did that, and you're still not happy.
I wanted us to all have dinner together.
And we could have, if you hadn't left to go to the store. That was your choice.
I dropped my hand from the doorknob, stepping back out of the porch light. From the sound of it, this was happening just inside, and the last thing I wanted was to walk into the middle of it.
I just wish,
Heidi said, her voice cracking. then nothing. The silence was almost unbearable, broken only when my dad said,
"You just wish what?"
I don't know, she said. I thought you'd want to spend more time with us.
I'm here all the time, Heidi, my dad said, his voice flat.
Yes, but you're in your office. You're not with Thisbe, interacting with her. You don't rock her or get up with her.
We discussed this as soon as you got pregnant, my dad told her, his voice rising. I told you I cannot function on broken sleep, that I have to get my 9 hours. You knew that.
Okay, but you could take her during the day or in the morning so I could deal with work stuff. Or even...
Have we not discussed, my dad said, how important it is that I finish the book this summer, that I can't do the work I need to do during the academic year, and this is my only chance to work uninterrupted?
Yes, of course, but...
Which is why, he continued, talking over her, I said, let's hire a nanny or a babysitter, but you didn't want to.
I don't need a nanny. I just need an hour here or there.
So ask Auden. Isn't that why you wanted her to come visit?
I literally felt like I'd been slapped. My reaction was that visceral, blood rushing to my face.
I didn't invite Auden so she'd babysit, she said.
Then why is she here?
Another silence followed. This one I welcomed, though, as sometimes a question can hurt more than an answer. Finally, Heidi said,
"For the same reason I want you to spend time with the baby. Because she's your daughter, and you should want to be with her."
"Oh, Jesus," my dad said. "Do you really think..."
There was more coming. Of course there was. My dad never said a sentence when he could go on for a paragraph. But this time I couldn't stand to hear it. So I dug my keys out of my pocket and got into my car. I stayed gone for 3 hours, driving up and down the streets of Colby, circling up to the college, down to the pier, then back again. It was too small a place to really get lost in, but I did my best. And when I pulled back into the driveway, I made sure all the lights were out in the house before I even thought about going inside. It was quiet as I stepped into the foyer, shutting the door behind me. At least there was no sign of major disturbances. The stroller was parked by the stairs, a burp cloth folded over the banister, my dad's keys sitting on the table by the door. The only thing different was the kitchen table, which was now piled with Heidi's business checkbook, various stacks of paper, and a couple of legal pads. On one of them, she'd clearly been trying to figure out what had happened with accounts. "Withholding," she'd written, as well as "deposit 611," and "check all debit since April. Errors?" From the looks of it, messy, sort of desperate, she hadn't gotten very far. Looking down at the mess of papers, I had a flash of her hurt face after I'd snapped at her, as well as what she'd said later to my dad about me. It was so unexpected to have her in my corner, defending me. Even more shocking was how grateful I'd felt, if only fleetingly, to find her there. I glanced at my watch. It was 12:15, early by my clock, with a full night still ahead of me. And the coffee maker was right there on the counter, already filled for the morning and ready to go. It wasn't Ray's, but it would do. So I turned, hitting the button, and as it began to brew, I sat down with Heidi's checkbook, flipping it open, and went looking for what she'd lost. Chapter 5.
Hey, Odd, it's me. What's going on?
My brother's voice, loud and cheerful, boomed through my cell phone. A loud bass beat behind it. I was sure that Hollis did spend some of his time in places other than bars, but he never seemed to call me from any of them.
Not much, I said, glancing at my watch. It was 8:30 p.m. my time, which meant well past midnight his. Just getting ready to go to work.
Work? He said, saying the word like it was from another language, which to him it sort of was.
I thought you were supposed to be having a lazy summer, just hanging out at the beach.
I was sure it was no coincidence he'd put it like this, almost verbatim, the way my mother had described it during our last conversation. If Hollis was able to spin my mom's thinking any way he wanted, she had similar influence over his own. Their connection was almost eerie. Really, a bond that was so strong you could almost feel it. Like a tidal pull when they were together. My mother claimed it was the result of all those nights they spent together when he was a baby. But I wondered if it was just that Hollis had a way with women, starting with the first one he'd ever known.
Well, I said now, as the music grew louder, then dropped off again behind him. I didn't plan on working, actually. It just sort of happened.
That sucks, he said. Drop your guard and stuff like that will sneak up on you. You gotta stay vigilant, you know?
I knew. In truth, though, this latest situation was no surprise. If anything, I'd walked right into it, eyes wide open. I had no one to blame but myself.
I can't believe it, Heidi had said when she came down the day after I'd worked on her books. As always, she was in the kitchen, lying in wait, the baby strapped to her and the baby Bjorn. When I went to bed last night, this was all such a mess. And then this morning, it's fixed. You're a miracle worker. How did you even know how to do all that?
I worked for an accountant last summer, for a little while, I told her, pulling the coffee out of the freezer. By the time I got up, they'd long ago rinsed out the pot, so I always got a fresh one, all mine. It was no big deal.
I spent 2 hours last night going over this checkbook register, she said, picking it up and waving it at me. And I couldn't find the problem. How did you even know to consider double withholding?
I started the coffee maker, wishing I could at least have a cup in me before having to converse with anyone. No chance of that, though.
The register indicated it happened last May, I told her, so I just figured it might have again, and then when I went to look at the tax statements, which were such a mess, too, I couldn't find a thing in them, she said, and now they're all organized. You must have spent hours getting all this stuff in order.
For, I thought. Out loud, I said, no, I really didn't. She just shook her head, watching me as the coffee maker finally produced enough for a quarter of a cup, which I quickly poured into my mug. You know, she said, I've been needing to hire someone to help me with the books for months now, but I was hesitant as it's such a sensitive job. I didn't want to give it to just anyone. Oh, dear Lord, I thought. Please just let me drink my coffee. But if you are interested, she continued, I'd make it worth your while. Seriously. I was still waiting for the caffeine to hit as I said, I wasn't really planning to work this summer, and I'm not exactly a morning person.
Oh, you wouldn't have to be, though, she said. The girls do the deposit every day, and that's the only thing that has to be done by a certain time.
The rest, like the books and the payroll and keeping track of the register take, you can do later in the day. It's actually better if you wait, really. Of course it was. And now I was stuck, as clearly no good deed went unpunished. The bigger issue, though, was what had inspired this sudden burst of Good Samaritan behavior on my part. Was it that hard to realize that it would never just stop with one thing, that there would always be a next step expected, and then one beyond that? "That's a really nice offer," I said to Heidi, "but..." This thought was interrupted by the sound of footsteps behind me. A moment later, my dad rounded the corner, carrying an empty plate, a Diet Coke can balanced on top of it. When he saw Heidi, and she looked back at him, I knew instantly their argument from the night before had not been resolved. It wasn't exactly a chill in the air as much as a deep freeze. "Well," he said to me, walking to the sink and putting his plate into it, "I see you're finally awake. What time do you go to bed these days, anyway?" "Late," I told him. "Or early, depending on how you look at it." He nodded as he rinsed off the plate, sticking it in the dish rack. "Ah, the ease of youth. Up all night, not a care in the world. I envy you." "Don't," I thought. Heidi said, "Actually, Auden spent last night going over my books. She found the error that threw off my balance." "Really?" my dad said, glancing at me. "I'm trying to convince her to work for me," Heidi added. "Do a few hours a day in the office at the shop." "Heidi," he said, rinsing off his hands, "Auden's not here to work. Remember?" It was just one comment, but crafted for maximum impact. And it delivered. I watched as Heidi winced. "Of course not," she said. "I just thought that she might..." "She should be enjoying her time with her family," he told her. Then he smiled at me. "What do you say, Auden? How about you and me have dinner tonight?" He was good, my dad. I had to give him that. And so what if this was all about getting back at Heidi for the night before? It was exactly what I wanted. Just me and him. And that was all that mattered. Wasn't it? "That sounds great," Heidi said. When I looked at her, she smiled at me, although it seemed a little forced. "And look, don't worry about the job thing. Your dad's right. You should just be enjoying your summer." My dad was taking a last sip of his Diet Coke, watching her as she said this. It had been a while since I'd had to listen to my parents fight. But no matter. Same tension, same barbs, same look on my dad's face when he knew he'd won. "Actually," I said, speaking before I even really realized what I was doing, "I could use some extra money for school, as long as it wasn't too many hours." Heidi looked surprised, then glanced at my dad, whose expression could best be described as annoyed, before saying, "Oh, it wouldn't be. Just like 15 a week, if that." "Auden," my dad said, "don't feel obligated. You're here as our guest." I knew that if I hadn't heard their argument the night before, this entire exchange would have been different. But you can't unlearn something, even if you want to. You know what you know. Later that evening, my dad and I walked up the boardwalk to a place right on the pier, where we ordered a pound of steamed shrimp and sat looking over the water. I wasn't sure if it was that I couldn't stop thinking about what he'd said, or that he was still annoyed at me taking Heidi's offer, and in his mind at least, sighed. But at first it was a little stiff, awkward.
After he had a beer, and we both endured some very dull conversation, though, things loosened up. With him asking me about DeFreeze and my plans for my major. In turn, I got him to talk about his book, an intricate study of a man trying to escape his family's past, and the progress he was making. He'd had to tear out the middle. It just wasn't working, but the new stuff was much, much better. It took a while, but somewhere between the second pound of shrimp and his detailed explanation about his character's inner conflict, I was reminded of everything I loved about my dad. His passion for his work, and the way when he was talking to you about it, it was like there was no one else in the room, or even in the world. "I can't wait to read it," I told him, as the waitress dropped off our check. Between us there was a huge mound of shrimp shells, translucent and pink in the sunlight, slanting through the window. "It sounds great." "See, you understand how important all this is," he said, wiping his mouth. "You were there when Narwhal came out and saw how its success changed our lives. This could do the same for me and the baby and Heidi. I just wish she could see that." He was studying his beer bottle as he said this, turning it in his hand. "Well, it could be she's just emotional right now. Sleep deprivation and all that."
"Maybe," he took a sip.
"But in truth, she doesn't think like we do, Auden. Her strength is business, which is all about results. Very calculating. It's different with academics and writers. You know that." I did know that. But I also knew that my mother, who fit both of these categories, had felt the exact same way about his efforts with this exact same novel. Still, it was nice to know he felt he could confide in me. After dinner, we parted ways and I headed toward Clementine's, where I told Heidi I'd look over the office and get my bearings before officially starting work the next day. I wasn't exactly looking forward to it, for any number of reasons, so I was actually grateful for once for the distraction that was my brother. "So," I said to him now as the music began to thump again, "Tara's nice."
"Who?"
"Tara," I repeated. "Your girlfriend?" "Oh, right." There was a pointed pause, which pretty much answered any lingering questions I might have asked. Then, "So you got your present, huh?" I could see the picture frame, which was in my duffel bag, instantly in my mind. Those words beneath his grinning face, "The best of times." "Yeah," I said to Hollis. "It's great. I love it." He chuckled. "Come on, Aud. You do not." "I do." "No, you don't. It's totally tacky." "Well," I said, "it's horrible," he finished for me. "Cheap and ridiculous. Probably the stupidest graduation gift ever, which is exactly why I gave it to you." He laughed, that booming Hollis guffaw that, despite myself, always made me want to laugh too. "Look, I figured there was no way I could compete with all the money and savings bonds and new cars you'd be getting from everyone else, so I decided at least my offering should be memorable." "It is that," I agreed. "You should have seen the others." Another laugh. "They had them with all kinds of sayings. One was, 'Hello, friend,' in bright yellow. Also, 'Party queen,' in pink. And then there was the one that said inexplicably in green, 'Crazy person.' Like anyone would want their picture in that." "Only you," I said. "No kidding," he snorted. "Anyway, I figured the cool thing was that you could keep switching out the picture, because you don't want the best of times to be just one thing forever. You have to have a lot of best of times, each one topping the last, you know?" "Yeah," I said. And just like that, he'd done it again. Taken a thought he'd probably come to on the fly, under any number of influences, and somehow managed to make it deep enough to resonate. It was an art, what Hollis did. Never calculating, but it did have its charms. "I miss you," I said to him.
"I miss you too," he replied. "Hey, look, I'll send a crazy person frame. You can put that picture of me in it. Set it next to you in the best of times, and it'll almost be like we're together. What do you think?"
I smiled. "It's a deal." "Cool." There was a muffled noise, followed by loud voices. "Okay, Aud, I gotta run. Ramona and me are headed to a party. Talk soon, though, okay?"
"Sure," I said. "Let's..." But then he was gone, just like that. Before I could ask him who exactly Ramona was, or what had happened in Amsterdam. That was my brother, the living, breathing, to be continued. Like my dad's book, he was always in progress. I shut my phone, then slid it back into my pocket. Hollis was a great distraction, but any regret I'd been feeling about taking the job came rushing back as soon as I opened the door to Clementine's and saw Maggie standing at the register, Leah and Esther on either side of her. There is really nothing more intimidating than approaching a group of girls who have already made up their minds about you. It's like walking a plank. No way to go but down.
"Hello," Leah, the redhead, said as I came toward them. She was one of those tall, curvy types with milky white skin and was wearing a low-cut sundress and strappy heels. Her voice was neither kind nor unkind, just sort of level as she said, "What can we do for you?"
"She's going to be doing the books," Maggie told her, although her eyes were on me. When I looked back at her, though, she flushed, turning her gaze to some papers on the counter in front of her, shuffling them busily.
"Heidi's been looking for someone since the baby came, remember?"
"Oh, right," Leah said. She pushed back from the counter, hopping up on the one behind her, and folded her long legs.
"Well, maybe now our checks won't bounce."
"No kidding," Esther said. Her pigtails were gone, her hair loose, and topped with an army-style cap, which she was wearing with a black sundress, a denim jacket thrown over it, and flip-flops.
"I mean, I love Heidi, but getting paid at the ATM is kind of sketchy."
"You did get paid, though. Heidi's a good boss. It was an honest mistake," Maggie said. Now she was making a studied point of not looking at me as she hit a button on the register, then pulled out a stack of bills, straightening them. Again, she was dressed in pink, both her shirt and flip-flops, and I wondered if this was some kind of signature thing with her. I bet it was.
"Anyway, someone's supposed to show her around."
"Who?" Leah asked. "Heidi?"
"No."
Maggie shut the drawer, then looked at me. A moment later, Leah and Esther both followed suit. Clearly, I'd reached the end of that plank. Nothing to do but jump.
"Auden," I said.
A pause. Then Leah pushed herself off the counter, dropping her feet to the floor with a clunk.
"Come on," she said over her shoulder. "The office is this way."
I could feel the other girls watching me as I followed her past a couple of racks of jeans, a shoe display, and a clearance section to a narrow hallway.
"That's the bathroom," she said, nodding at a door on the left. "Not for customer use ever, it's the rule. And here's the office. Stand back, the door kinda sticks."
She reached for the knob, then pushed herself against it. A second later, I heard a pop, and it swung open.
The first thing I saw was pink. All four walls were painted a rosy, almost bubblegummy shade of Maggie's favorite color. What wasn't pink, which at first glance didn't seem like much, was orange. Adding to the insanity, the very small space was jammed with all kinds of girly little touches. Pink stacking bins, a Hello Kitty pencil cup, a bowl filled entirely with lipsticks and lip glosses. Even the filing cabinets had pink and orange labels, and a pink feather boa was stretched out over across the top of them.
"Wow," I said, unable to keep my silence.
"I know," Leah agreed. "It's like being in a Starburst box. So the safe is under the desk, the checkbook lives in the second left-hand drawer when it's here, and all the invoices go under the bear."
"The bear?"
She stepped inside the room, walked to the desk, and picked up a little stuffed pink bear, wearing an orange hat.
"Here," she said, pointing to the stack of paper beneath him.
"Don't ask me. It was like that when I got hired. Any questions?" Of course, I had several, but none she could answer.
"No, thanks."
"Sure thing. Just holler if you need us."
She stepped past me, back into the hallway, where I was still standing, having not yet had the strength to actually venture inside. I heard her take a few steps before she said, "An Auden?" I turned, facing her.
"Yeah?"
She glanced over her shoulder, then took one step back toward me.
"Don't worry about Maggie. She's just emotional. She'll get over it."
"Oh," I said, wondering how exactly I was supposed to respond to this. Even I knew better than to talk about one girl with another one, especially if they were friends.
"Right." She nodded, then walked away, back to the register, where Esther and Maggie were now bent over a box, sticking price tags onto sunglasses. As she approached, they glanced up at her, then easily adjusted themselves, making room for her to join them. I looked back into the pink room, and for some reason thought of my mother. If only because she was the only person I knew who would have had more trouble entering it than I did. I could just imagine her face, how her eyes would narrow in disgust, the heavy, through-the-nostril sigh that would speak louder than the words that followed it.
"It's like a womb in here," she'd groan, "an environment totally ruled by gender stereotypes and expectations, as pathetic as those who chose to inhabit it."
"Exactly," I thought. Then I went inside. Heidi's office might have been over the top, but her books were actually in pretty good shape. When I'd worked for my mom's accountant the summer before, I'd seen some crazy bookkeeping methods. There were people who came in with registers where entire months' worth of checks were missing, others who only seemed to keep their receipts on matchbooks or napkins. Heidi's stuff was organized. Her files made sense, and there were only a few discrepancies, all of which had happened in the last 10 months or so. Maybe this shouldn't have been a surprise to me, considering what my dad had said about her business background. But it was. Not shocking was the fact that, at first, the office was completely distracting. I actually felt a little nauseated, sitting there, a condition exacerbated when I turned on the desk lamp, which had an orange shade and made everything seem even more radioactive. But after a few minutes with the calculator and the checkbook, it all just kind of fell away. I hadn't realized how much I missed the simplicity of a project of numbers, how things just made sense in sums and division. No emotion, no complications, just digits on screen, lining up in perfect sequence. I was so immersed, in fact,
but at first I didn't even hear the music coming from the store behind me. It was only when it suddenly got very loud, like someone had twisted the volume from the lowest to highest setting, that it broke through the tax forms I was looking at and got my attention. I looked at the clock. It was 9:01. Then pushed my chair back and eased the door open. Out in the hallway, the music was positively deafening. Some disco song with a fast beat, a girl's voice chanting some lyrics about a summer crush over it. I was wondering if maybe they were having some issue with the stereo system when I saw Esther suddenly go shimmying past the jeans display, her arms waving over her head. She was followed moments later by Leah, doing a slow, hip-swiveling move, and then Maggie, bouncing on her tiptoes. It was like a conga line of three, passing quickly, then gone. I took another step forward, leaning out a bit more into the store. I couldn't see any customers, although the boardwalk looked crowded, lots of people passing by. I'd just decided to go back to the office and wait for the silence to return, when Esther popped up from behind the bathing suit rack. This time doing a step-slide move, her hair swinging out to the side. She reached out a hand to Leah, pulling her into view, then spinning her out and back toward her as they both laughed. Then they split, and Maggie moved in between them, shaking her hips as they circled around her, still dancing. I didn't realize I was standing there just staring at them until Esther saw me. "Hey!" she called out. Her cheeks were flushed. "It's the 9 o'clock dance. Come on." Instinctively, I shook my head. "No, thanks."
"You can't say no,"
Leah yelled as she grabbed Maggie's hand, then spun her out and back again.
"Employee participation is mandatory."
Then I quit, I thought. But already they were moving on, back to the conga line, this time with Maggie in the lead, bouncing up and down, Esther snapping her fingers behind her. Leah, bringing up the rear, glanced back at me one last time. When I didn't say or do anything, she just shrugged, following the others as they wound around the displays and headed toward the door. I went back to the office, sitting down at the desk. I was sure they thought I was a total stick in the mud. Not that I cared. It was just like all the activities I'd walked past at my old schools during lunch. Fake sumo wrestling, pie-eating contest, mass games of Twister on the quad. Always wondering how exactly you did stuff like that. Maybe if you'd done it as a kid, it was all nostalgia, and that was the appeal. But I hadn't. It was all new to me, and therefore more intimidating than anything else. I picked up my pen, going back to my 1099s. A moment later, the music stopped, as suddenly as it had begun. Another hour passed, in the silence of numbers, and then there was a tap on the door. "Closing time," Esther said as she came in behind me, a bank bag in one hand. "Can I get in the safe?" I pushed out my chair, making room as she dropped down to a squat, sticking the key she was holding into the lock. I watched as she put the bag in, then swung the door shut before pushing herself up again. "We'll be out of here in about 10 minutes," she told me, brushing off her knees. "You coming with us or staying late?" I wanted to tell her that, to me, after 10 wasn't late. But I knew she wasn't really looking to make conversation, so I said, "I'm almost done." "Cool. Just come out front and we can lock up when we're all out." I nodded. She left the door open behind her. So, as I finished up the last few things I had going, I could hear her and Maggie and Leah out by the register chattering. "Where did these Skittles come from?" Esther asked. "Where do you think?" Leah told her. "Really? I could tell by her voice, slightly teasing, that Esther was smiling.
So, Mags, more candy from Adam, huh?
Maggie sighed.
I told you guys, it means nothing. He's a store-goer, just like all those boys.
That may be true, Leah said. But just because he goes to the store doesn't mean he has to buy something for you every time.
He doesn't do it every time, Maggie grumbled.
Sure seems like it, Esther said. And with a store-goer boy, that is the first sign anyway. It's how you know.
True, Leah agreed.
Not true, Maggie said. It's just candy. Stop breeding so much into it. You guys are ridiculous.
I could second that. It amazed me that they'd been together all night, and yet they still seemingly had something to talk about. Even if it was, predictably, candy and boys. When I came out, they were all by the front door, waiting for me.
I understand if you don't want to get involved with him, Leah was saying. I mean, he is a high school boy.
He graduated just like we did, Leah, Esther told her.
True, but he's not a college boy yet. There's a big difference in that one summer.
How would you know? You refuse to date anyone but college guys.
Why does that bother you so much? I mean, in college, we'll all be dating college boys anyway. So what's the harm in starting early?
It's not that it's harmful, Esther replied, as we all filed out, Maggie swinging the door shut and pulling out her keys. I just think that maybe you miss something. You know, by refusing to date anyone your own age.
What would I have missed?
I don't know, Esther shrugged. There's something kind of nice about having the age thing in common.
Says the person who hasn't dated in over a year, Leah said.
I'm choosy, Esther told her.
Picky, Maggie said. Nobody is good enough for you.
I have high standards. It's better than dating just anyone.
There was a sudden, awkward pause, noticeable enough that even I felt it. Maggie, putting her keys in the door, stiffened. Esther said,
Oh, Mags, you know I didn't mean Jake.
Okay, okay, Maggie said, shaking her off. Let's not even talk about it. This wouldn't be easy, though, as I realized when I looked to my right to the bike shop, where I saw the curly-headed guy sitting on a bike and talking to two boys I didn't recognize. Right behind him, pulling a jacket over his shoulders, was Jake. When he turned, he looked right at me. Great, I thought, hurriedly turning my back, which left me facing Esther and Leah, who were trying to decide where to go from here.
There's always the tip, Esther was saying. I heard something about a keg there tonight.
I'm so tired of the sand and flat beer, Leah groaned. Let's go to a club or something.
You're the only one with an ID, remember?
I can get you guys in.
You always say that, Esther told her. You never can. Mags, what do you want to do?
Maggie shrugged, dropping her keys into the bag she had slung over her shoulder.
I don't care, she said. I might just go home.
Leah shot a glance at Jake, then at me. Nonsense. Let's at least... This thought was interrupted by the curly-headed guy who suddenly rode up right beside us, breaking to a stop with a screech.
Ladies! He said. Leah rolled her eyes. Anyone want a ride to the jump park?
Oh, God help us, Leah said. Please, no more nights involving bicycles. What are we, 12?
They're not just bicycles, the guy said, offended. How can you even say that?
Easily, she replied. And anyway, Adam...
I'll go, Maggie said, interrupting her. Adam smiled, then sat back on his seat as she climbed onto the handlebars, arranging her purse in her lap.
What? She said to Leah, who sighed. It's better than some club.
No, Leah said flatly. It really isn't.
Oh, lighten up,
Adam told her, as he pushed off the boardwalk, starting to pedal. Maggie leaned back, closing her eyes, and then they were on their way, the other guys on bikes in front of the shop following behind them. Leah shook her head, annoyed, but allowed Esther to link her arm in hers as they brought up the rear on foot, which left just me and Jake. I tried to turn and start for home, but no luck. Two steps in and he was beside me.
So, he said, what was all that about the other night anyway? You took off awfully fast.
He was too everything, too confident, standing too close, wanting too much. I said, it wasn't about anything.
Oh, he said, his voice low. I think it was, and could still be. You want to take a walk or something?
It was all I could do not to cringe. I'd already regretted what we'd done, and that was before he was Maggie's ex and Eli's brother. And how strange was it that I, who wanted to know as little as possible about anything here, now knew all this.
Look, I said to him, what happened the other night was a mistake, okay? You're calling me a mistake?
I have to go, I told him, and started to walk away.
You're messed up, you know that?
He said, as I ducked my head down, focusing on the end of the boardwalk.
Freaking tease.
More steps, more space. I just stepped off the boardwalk onto the street and finally let myself sort of relax when I saw Eli up ahead, coming toward me. He was walking slowly behind a group of older women dressed for a night out, all of them too tan and wearing bright colors. I tried to make myself too small to be seen, but just as he passed me, he looked over. Please just move along, I thought, fixing my gaze tightly on the plaid shirt of the guy walking in front of me. But Eli was clearly different from his brother, in that he took direction well. No words shouted, nothing said. In fact, he didn't even look at me twice. Just walked on.
Chapter 6 Auden? Have you...
I stopped, listened, waited. But, as usual, nothing followed this but silence. Sighing, I put down my econ textbook, stood up, and opened my bedroom door. Sure enough, there was Heidi, Thisbe in her arms, looking at me with a perplexed expression.
Oh, for God's sake, she said. I had a concrete reason why I came up here, and now I have no idea what it was. Can you even believe that?
I could. In fact, Heidi's forgetfulness had become as much a part of my routine as my morning coffee and late, late nights. I had done the best I could to keep myself segregated, my own life in Colby as separate from hers and my dad's as possible, considering we were living under the same roof. But it was no use. 2 weeks in, and I was hopelessly intertwined, whether I liked it or not. Because of this, I was now fully aware of the fact that my dad's mood depended entirely on how his writing went that day. A good morning, and he was cheerful the rest of the day. A bad one, and he skulked around, sullen and muttering. I knew all the ups and downs of Heidi's ongoing postpartum issues, such as the forgetfulness, insane mood swings, and how she worried on multiple complex levels about every freaking thing the baby did, from sleeping to eating to pooping. I was even fully versed in Thisbe's day-to-day life. From the crying, which was ongoing, it seemed, to her tendency to get the hiccups right when she was finally falling asleep. Maybe they were equally aware of me as well, but I doubted it. Because of all this, I'd actually come to kind of enjoy, sometimes even crave, the few hours I spent at Clementine's every day. It was a chance to do something concrete, with a beginning, middle, and end. No wild emotional swings, no wondering aloud about someone else's bathroom habits, and no hiccuping. The only thing that kept it from being perfect was its close proximity to Esther, Leah, and Maggie, and all their various dramatics. But at least they left me alone when my door was shut. Now I looked at Heidi, who was still standing there, her brow furrowed as she tried to remember why she'd come upstairs. Thisbe, in her arms, was awake and staring up at the ceiling, most likely debating when she wanted to start screaming again. "Did it have something to do with work?" I asked her, as I'd learned that a few prompts could sometimes trigger her memory.
"No," she said, shifting Thisbe to her other arm. "I was downstairs and thinking that I had to get the baby down for a nap soon, but it's been so hard because she's been switching it up so much, so no matter what I do, she gets overtired."
I tuned out and began mentally reviewing the periodic table, which usually kept me occupied during these soliloquies. "So I was going to try to put her down, but then I didn't because..." She snapped her fingers. "The wave machine! That's what it was! I can't find it! Have you seen it around?" I was about to say no. 2 weeks ago, when I'd first arrived, I would have, with no guilt or even a second thought. But thanks to the intertwining, I said, "I think it might be on that table by the front door."
"Oh, wonderful!"
She sighed, looking down at Thisbe, who was yawning. "Well, I'll just go grab it, and we'll hope for the best. I mean, yesterday I tried to put her down at the same time. She was clearly exhausted, but of course the minute I did, she started up. I swear it's like..." I began easing the door shut, slowly, slowly, until at last she got the hint, stepping back and turning toward the stairs. "So, wish us luck," she was saying, when I finally heard the knob click. I sat down on my bed, looking out at the beach below. There were a lot of things about being here that I didn't understand, and I was okay with that. But the wave machine? It drove me nuts. Here we were, mere feet from the real, actual ocean, and yet Heidi was convinced that Thisbe could only sleep with the sound of manufactured waves, turned up to the highest setting, no less, supplied by her noise machine, which meant that I had to hear them all night long as well. It probably wouldn't have been that big a deal if it hadn't made it impossible to hear the real sea. So I was there, in a beachfront house, listening to a fake ocean. And this just seemed to sum up everything that was wrong with the situation from start to finish. Outside, I heard footsteps again, then a door opening and shutting. A moment later, sure enough, the waves began. Fake, loud, and endless. I stood up, grabbing my bag, and stepped out into the hallway, moving past Thisbe's barely open door as quietly as I could. At the top of the stairs, I paused, looking into my dad's study, the door to which he always kept slightly ajar. He was at his desk, facing the wall as usual, a Diet Coke can and a whole apple next to him. So it had been a good day. Like I said, I'd become versed in my dad's habits. And by using my talents of observation, I'd figured out that he took an apple up to his office every day after lunch.
If it was a good day, he always got too immersed in what he was doing and didn't eat it. On a bad one, though, the core was bitten down to nothing, nibbled to death, sometimes even in two pieces. On a whole apple day, he emerged at dinner time cheerful and talkative. On an apple core day, especially a two-piece core, you did best to steer clear, if he even came down at all. Most days, though, I wasn't around for dinner anyway, as I left at 5 or so to head to Clementine's, where I grabbed a sandwich as I worked until closing. After that, I usually walked the boardwalk for an hour or so before coming home to get my car and taking off for another 3 or 4. I'd found one all-night place called the Wheelhouse Diner, about 35 miles away, but it was no raise. The booths were narrow and stank like bleach, and the coffee was watery. Plus, the waitresses all dirty-looked you if you stayed longer than it took to eat whatever you ordered, even though the place was usually deserted. So more often than not, I'd just stop at the Gas Grow, the closest convenience store, buy a big travel cup of coffee and sip it as I drove around. In just 2 weeks, I knew about every inch of Colby backward and forward, for all the good that would do me. By the time I got to Clementine's, it was almost 6, and the shift was about to change, which meant technically that Esther was done and Maggie was coming on, although more often than not, and for reasons I didn't understand, whoever was leaving usually still hung around, unpaid, by choice. Then again, hanging around seemed to be all anyone did in Colby. The girls gathered at Clementine's, crowding the register and gossiping, flipping through fashion magazines, while the boys were on the benches in front of the bike shop, gossiping and reading bike magazines. It was ridiculous. And yet, it went on. Every day, all day long. "Hey there," Esther, who was the friendliest of all the girls, called out to me when I came in. "How's it going?" "Good," I said, my standard reply. I'd long ago resolved to be cordial, but not overly so, lest I be sucked into some conversation about what celebrity was in rehab or strap versus strapless dresses. "Any shipments in today?" "Just these." She picked up a couple of slips of paper, handing them off to me as I passed. "Oh, we got an extra roll of quarters at the bank today for some reason, and I put the deposit slip under the bear." "Great, thanks." "No problem." A minute later, I was in the office, door shut, all alone. Just how I liked it. If only the walls had been a cool white, everything would have been perfect. Usually, my focus on my work allowed me to tune out anything that was going on out in the store. But occasionally, as I switched tasks, I'd hear bits here and there. When Leah was working, she was always on her cell phone. Esther seemed to spend a lot of time humming and singing to herself. And Maggie, well, Maggie was always talking to the customers. "Oh, those look great," I heard her say around 7:30 as I started on the payroll for the week. "Petunias are the best jeans, I swear, I live in mine." "I don't know," a girl's voice replied. "I like the pockets on these, but I'm not sure about the wash." "It's a little dark," a pause. "But at the same time, I think it's always good to have one pair of jeans you can always dress up, you know? And a dark wash guarantees that. Not all jeans look good with heels, but those will." "Yeah? Oh, totally. But if the wash worries you, we can pull a few other brands. The pockets on the pink slingbacks are great. And then there's always the Courtney Amandas. They're like magic for your butt." The girl laughed. "Then I definitely need to try them." "Done. Let me just find your size,"
I rolled my eyes at no one, punching a few numbers into the calculator. Every time I overheard her going on in such detail about stuff like this, the nuances of different brands of flip-flops, or the pros and cons of boy shorts versus bikini bottoms, it seemed like such a waste. Here you had the capability to know so much about so many things, and you chose shoes and clothes. Leah, at least, seemed smart, while Esther, who clearly followed her own beat, was an individual. But Maggie was just... well, she was just like Heidi. A girl's girl, all the way, all pink and fluff and frivolity. Even worse, she was happy about it. "Here they are," I heard her say now. "Oh, and I grabbed a pair of these great dapper wedges we just got in, so you could see how they do with a bit more formal look." "Thanks," the customer said. "These look great. I love shoes." "Of course you do," Maggie replied. "You're human, aren't you?"
For God's sake, I thought. Where was the wave machine when you really needed it?
A little while later, I heard the front door chime. A moment later, the music cranked up, this time a loud, thumping dance beat. I didn't even have to look at my watch. By this point, I knew the 9 o'clock dance when I heard it. It happened each night, an hour before closing, regardless of whether there was only one employee or all three present, and always lasted exactly the length of one song, no longer. I didn't know how the customers reacted, although I could remember how I had, which was why I made sure to stay in the office. From about 9:03 to 10, there were always a few more customers and a lot of idle chatter, usually concerning plans for the night or the lack thereof. Again, I tried to make it a point not to listen, but sometimes this was impossible, which was why I now knew that Leah always wanted to go out to the clubs. Better chances of meeting older boys they hadn't known all their lives, while Esther preferred to go hear music. Apparently she had some sort of singer-songwriter bent. Maggie, from what I could tell, didn't do much other than hang out with the boys from the bike shop, most likely pining after Jake, although she swore up and down she was over him. So over him. This night was no different, as became clear when I heard Leah say, "So, it's ladies in free at Tally Ho tonight." "What was it," Esther said, "that we swore the last time we went there?" "We didn't." "No, no, no to Tally Ho," Maggie recited over her. Someone snickered. Then Leah said, "I don't understand what is it you guys hate so much about that place."
"Everything," Esther said. "It's better than going to open mic at Ossify and watching some guy recite his shopping list over a drum beat."
"I don't know," Maggie said. "Is it really?" More snickering.
"Look," Esther said, "I'm not saying we have to go to Ossify. I just don't feel like getting grinded on by some drunk tourist again tonight."
"There's always the jump park," Maggie said. Loud groans. "What? It's free. There are boys there."
"The boys we've known all our freaking lives," Leah said.
"And it's fun," Maggie finished. "Plus, I heard Eli might be riding this weekend." I'd been adding up a long list of numbers, and at just this moment lost track of the last one I'd punched in. I hit clear and started over.
"That rumor," Leah said, "goes around every week."
"Maybe, but this time I heard it from Adam."
"Who heard it from Eli?"
No answer from Maggie. "Exactly my point.
It's like a Bigfoot sighting by now. It's urban legend.
No one spoke for what seemed like a long time. Finally, Esther said,
"It has been over a year. You'd think that he'd eventually..."
"Abe was his best friend," Leah said. "You know how tight they were."
"I know, but still, he has to get back to it sometime."
"Says who?"
"What she means," Maggie said, "is that it was his life back then, and now he's here managing the shop. It's like everything just stopped."
Another silence. Leah said,
"Well, for him it probably did, you know."
There was a tap on the door behind me, making me jump. At some point, Esther had slipped away from them and come back with the cash from the register.
"We're about out of here," she said as she came in.
I moved aside, like I did every night, as she ducked under the desk to the safe.
"You almost done?"
"Yeah," I said. She swung the door shut, pulling out the safe key. "I'll, be out in a sec."
"All right."
When she left, I turned back to my calculator, starting to add again. Halfway down the row of numbers, though, I stopped and sat as still as I could, listening hard to see if the conversation would double back to where it had been before. When it didn't, I bent back over my numbers, punching them in slowly this time, one by one by one, so as not to make the same mistake again. By midnight, I'd already walked the boardwalk and driven a full loop of Colby proper, and still had a few hours before I even wanted to think about going home. Clearly, I needed coffee. So, I headed to the gas grow. I had just parked and was digging in my ashtray for change when I heard an engine zooming up behind me. When I looked up, a beat-up green truck was pulling in a few spaces down. Even before I saw the bikes piled in the back, I recognized the short, stocky guy behind the wheel, and Adam, Maggie's friend, beside him. They cut the engine and hopped out, going inside. After a moment, I followed them. The gas grow was small but clean, with neat aisles and not too bright lighting. I went straight to the full-strength grow roast, as was my habit, pulling out the biggest cup and filling it up. Adam and his friend were at the other end of the store, by the coolers, where they grabbed drinks before proceeding to the candy aisle.
"Goobers," Adam was saying, as I added a bit of cream to my cup. "Twizzlers, and let me see, maybe Junior Mints?"
"You know," his friend said, "you don't have to name each item out loud."
"It's my process, okay? I make better decisions when I vocalize as I do it."
"Well, it's annoying. At least do it quietly."
I put a lid on my cup, making sure it was secure, then started for the register, where a heavyset woman was buying some lottery tickets. A moment later, they stepped up behind me. I could see them in the mirrored reflection of the cigarette ad over our heads.
114, the clerk said, ringing me up.
I slid my exact change over, then reached for my cup. As I turned, Adam said,
"Hey, I thought you looked familiar. You, work at Clementine's, right?"
I knew that, It was obvious my one night of bad judgment had branded me as the girl who hooked up with Jake. Although Adam was nice enough not to say this, at least to my face.
"Yeah," I said, "I do."
"Adam," he said, pointing to himself. "And this is Wallace."
"Auden," I told him.
"Look at that," Adam said, nudging him. She bought a single cup of coffee. Such restraint.
No kidding,
Wallace said as they dumped their collective items onto the counter.
Who can come to the gas grow and only buy one thing?
Well, Adam said as the clerk began ringing things up. She's not from here.
This is true.
Wallace glanced at me.
No offense, of course. It's just that we're...
storegoers, I finished for him, without even thinking. He looked surprised, then exchanged a smile with Adam.
Exactly.
That'll be $15.85, the clerk said. And as they dug in their pockets, pulling out crumpled bills, I took the opportunity to slip out, back to my car. A moment later, they emerged, each carrying a bag, and climbed into the truck. I watched them back out, their lights moving across me as they pulled away. I sat there and drank my coffee for a little while, considering my options. There was always the all-night diner, or another loop around Colby. I glanced at my watch. Only 12:15. So many hours to fill, and so little to do it with. Maybe it was for this reason that I found myself pulling out, turning in the direction they'd gone. Not looking for Bigfoot, necessarily. Just something. It wasn't hard to find the jump park. All you had to do was follow the bikes. They were everywhere, crowding the narrow sidewalks, on racks on the backs of cars, or sticking up from rails on the roof. I stuck close to an old Volkswagen van with a bright orange one hanging off it, following as it turned into a big lot 2 or 3 streets away from the beach. As I parked, I could see some bleachers bordered by 2 huge lights, which were shining down on a row of jumps, ramps made out of logs, and sand. Every once in a while, you'd see someone on a bike rise up above the sight line, suspended in midair for just a moment before disappearing again. There was also an oval track made up of various types of berms, which some people were circling. And down from that, 2 large curved ramps facing each other. I sat in my car for a moment, watching someone in a black helmet ride down one side, then up the other, back and forth, mesmerized, as if someone were swinging a watch on a chain before my eyes. Then someone slammed the door on the Volkswagen, jerking me back to attention. I wasn't sure what I was doing there. It wasn't like it was exactly my scene or crowd. The bleachers were filled with girls who were probably busy comparing lip glosses and mooning over the guys as they rode below them. Further proof, as I looked closer, I spotted Maggie, sitting a few rows up, in pink, naturally. I hadn't looked closely enough to see if Jake was one of the guys currently moving through the jumps, but then again, I probably didn't need to. I sat back, picking up my cup of coffee and taking a sip. Cars were still pulling in and parking, and occasionally people would pass by my car, their voices rising overhead. Each time, I felt more self-conscious, reaching for my keys to crank the engine and get out of there. But then they'd move on, and I'd let my hand drop. After all, it wasn't like I had anything better to do. And at least this way I wasn't wasting gas.
Yo! I heard someone yell suddenly from somewhere to my right. Pretty girl, where's the party at?
I recognized Jake's voice instantly. Sure enough, when I turned, I spotted him 1 row over and 2 down, leaning against a silver sedan. He had on jeans and a red long-sleeved shirt, the tails of which were flapping in the breeze as he took a sip of something in the blue plastic cup in his hand. It took me a minute before I realized he hadn't even been speaking to me, but to a tall blonde who was walking a few rows down, her hands stuffed in the pockets of her jacket. She glanced up at him,
smiling shyly, and kept walking. A moment later, he was catching up with her, just a couple of cars in front of me. Crap, I thought, watching as he flashed her that wide smile. Leaving right then would have attracted way too much attention. But it wasn't like I wanted to sit and watch my biggest mistake in recent memory play out before me, either. I considered my options a moment, then carefully opened my door, sliding my feet onto the gravel. I eased it shut, ducking down as I rounded the car beside me, then put another and yet another between us. Due to my zigzag escape, I ended up in an area off to the left of the jump park, where there were only a couple of bike racks and a few straggly trees. It was just out of the reach of the bright lights by the bleachers, so I could see everything without being spotted. In other words, perfect. I leaned against a bike rack as I watched people move through the line of jumps. At first glance, each rider looked the same, but with further study, I realized everyone was going at different speeds on their approach, and some stayed closer to the ground, cautious, while others rose up high, then higher still, on the next. Occasionally, there'd be a smatter of applause or some hooting from the bleachers, but otherwise, it was strangely quiet. Just the sound of tires on gravel, broken up by moments of silence as they went airborne. After a while, I spotted Adam and Wallace, sitting on their bikes, helmets off, where people were lining up for the jumps. Wallace was eating Pringles, while Adam was looking up at the bleachers, gesturing for someone there to come join them. Following his gaze, I found Maggie again, still alone, still staring down at the ramps. "You can keep looking," I wanted to tell her, "but most likely he's under those bleachers, not in front of them." Stupid girl. Just as I thought this, she stood suddenly, like she'd heard me. I watched as she reached up, pulling her dark curls back at the base of her neck, then twisted an elastic around them. She reached into the bag beside her and pulled out a helmet, grabbing it by the strap, and starting down the bleachers to the boys waiting below. I had to admit, I was surprised. What I saw next, though, left me stunned. When she got to Adam, he hopped off his bike, offering it to her, and she climbed on, pulling the helmet over her head. He said something to her, and she nodded, then pushed back slowly, flexing her fingers over the ends of the handlebars. When she was about 20 feet back, she rose up on the pedals for a moment, squaring her shoulders, and started toward the jumps. She hit the first one at a moderate speed, kicking up a bit of dust, gaining even more momentum as she approached, then cleared the next. By the third, she was rising up really high, shoulders hunched, the bike seeming to float beneath her. Even from my limited experience, I could tell she was good. She hit the jumps squarely, and her landings were smooth, not clumsy like some of the other riders I'd seen. It seemed to take her no time or effort at all to do the entire set of them, and then she was circling back to where the boys were waiting. Wallace offered her a Pringle, and she took it, flipping up the visor of her helmet to pop it in her mouth. I was so busy watching this that at first I didn't see the figure that had appeared off to my right, so it took a second to realize it was Eli. His hair was loose over his shoulders, and he had on jeans and a green long-sleeved T-shirt. Unfortunately, by the time I processed all this, I'd been staring at him long enough for him to notice. He turned and looked right at me, and I nodded at him in reply, in what I hoped seemed like a casual way. He nodded back, sliding his hands in his pockets, and I thought of what Esther, Leah, and Maggie had been talking about earlier that day. How he did or didn't ride anymore, and the reasons, or person, behind that choice. Not that it was any of my business. I was leaving anyway. I started toward my car, which meant I had to walk right by him. As I got closer, he glanced up at me again.
"Already leaving?"
he said in that flat voice I recognized.
"Not exciting enough for you?"
"No," I said. I have somewhere I have to be."
"Busy times," he said.
"That's right." I didn't pretend to know Eli at all, but even so, I'd noticed that his manner was slightly hard to read. It was something in the way he talked that made it difficult to tell whether he was kidding or serious or what. This bothered me. Or intrigued me. Or both. "So," I said after a moment, figuring I had nothing to lose in asking, "do you jump?"
"Nope," he replied.
"You?" I almost laughed, then thought of Maggie and realized this maybe wasn't a joke. "No," I said. I haven't ridden a bike in ages." He considered this, then looked back at the jumps.
"Really?"
This too was said flatly. No intonation. So I had nothing to go on. Still, I felt defensive as I said, "I wasn't much for outdoor stuff as a kid."
"Outdoor stuff," he repeated.
"I went outside," I added. "I wasn't a recluse or anything. I just didn't ride bikes very much, and haven't recently."
"Right."
Again, it wasn't like this was critical, necessarily, but something about it still bugged me.
"What?" I said. "Is that a crime here or something? Like only buying one thing at the gas grow?"
I meant to say this in a kidding sort of way, but I sounded shrill, even to my own ears, hearing it. Or maybe just crazy. Eli said,
"What?"
I felt my face flush. "Nothing. Forget it." I turned to go, pulling my keys out of my pocket. I'd only taken 2 steps, though, when he said,
"You know, if you don't know how to ride a bike, that's nothing to be ashamed of."
"I can ride a bike," I said. And this was true. I'd learned over Christmas when I was 7 in our driveway, on Hollis's old Schwinn, with training wheels. From what I remembered, I'd liked it, or at least not hated it, which didn't explain why I couldn't actually recall doing it very much since then, or at all. I haven't had the opportunity in a while.
"Huh," he said.
That was just it. Just, huh. Jesus. "What?" He raised his eyebrows, probably because, again, my voice sounded high, slightly unbalanced. It was so weird, because usually I was totally nervous talking to guys, but Eli was different. He made me want to say more, not less, which was maybe not such a good thing.
"All I'm saying," he said after a moment, "is that we are at a jump park."
I just looked at him. "I'm not going to ride a bike just to prove to you that I can."
"I'm not asking you to," he replied. "However, if you're looking for an opportunity, here's your chance. That's all."
Which, of course, made perfect sense. I'd said I hadn't had the opportunity. He was pointing out that now I did. So why did I feel so unnerved? I took a breath, then another,